Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
This week on RVER, sponsored by Progressive Insurance.
I'm sorry, I can't operate on that vehicle.
But doctor, you took an oath.
That RV, it's my son's RV.
Oh, doctor, isn't there anything you can do?
I'm not a miracle worker, Sheila. I'm an RV surgeon, trained to save the lives of large injured recreational vehicles, which is definitely a real profession.
When your RV really needs saving, Progressive has you covered. See if you could save with a leader in RV insurance. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and affiliates. Covered subject to policy terms.
You gotta understand something here. This music is the glue of the world. It holds it all together. Without this, life would be meaningless.
So crazy about. It's just music.
For Broken Bells, James Mercer of The Shins brings his well-crafted pop songs, while Brian Burton, aka Danger Mouse, brings his dance-flavored production chops. The result is a resounding buy it. I'm Jim DeRogatis.
And I'm Greg Kott. Broken Bells joins us for a special live performance in Portland. Then it's Jim's turn to drop a quarter into the Desert Island Jukebox. That's all coming up on Sound Opinions.
This is Sound Opinions, and Greg, we did not get a chance last week to pay tribute to Jack Bruce, that incredible bassist who died at the age of 71 on October 25th. I'm going to play a song from him later, but not from the band you'd think, from a group I actually got to see him perform with.
That's going to be your Desert Island Jukebox pick later in the show, Jim. But first, we've got some music news.
Greg, I know that's your single of the year. That is Shake It Off from young Taylor Swift from her fifth album, 1989, named for the year of her birth. She has just made very big news with that record. It has sold nearly 1.3 million copies in its first week. That makes it only the second album of 2014 to sell more than a million copies, period. It's just behind Frozen, that soundtrack that will never go away. And nobody else has sold a million copies this year at all in the first week like Taylor just did. In fact, you have to go all the way back to 2002 for the Eminem show to find a first week debut that potent. He sold 1.3 million way back then. So Taylor Swift is proving so successful, Greg, that she's beginning to flex her muscle in the music industry. She made news also this week by announcing that she is pulling not only 1989, but all of her albums off of Spotify. Said Taylor, and I quote, "Music is art, and art is important and rare. Important rare things are valuable. valuable things should be paid for. She's joining people like Tom York of Radiohead who have criticized Spotify's business model. I saw an article based on information from Spotify Artists, a website that explains the economic model to artists. People earn on average less than a penny per play of a song on Spotify, about 0.006 to 0.0084 cents per play. Spotify denies this. They say we have a good business model. It's getting better for artists all the time as more people join. And some people on the level of, say, a Taylor Swift have made almost $500,000 from Spotify plays. But she's raising the issue anew. A lot of people are questioning why they're not making as much money from streaming as they are from album sales. Taylor's doing well with album sales indeed. Come in.
Rumbling through the ether, take a ride in Aquila. Cost you fed in Lyra, pushing dealer, has to meet her. A shrewd operator in the shadow of a beacon. Have a dirty weekend, interesting proposition. Insinuating lessons.
At the opposite end of the commercial spectrum from Taylor Swift, Jim, is this band that we're playing right now, Young Fathers. That's a song called Get Up from a new album called Dead, which just won the prestigious Mercury Prize in London the other night. This is an award for the best British or Irish album of the year, and it was a huge upset. This relatively obscure band that describes itself as Liberian, Nigerian, Scottish, psychedelic, hip-hop, electro boy band.
I like that.
I think that covers just about the entire spectrum of music, actually.
Maybe klezmer needs to be in there.
Exactly. They upset some big nominees. Damon Albarn was nominated, Anna Calvi, Royal Blood, FKA Twigs, big-name albums all in the UK beaten out by this upstart hip-hop group. This is only the fourth hip-hop act to win a Mercury Prize since the award was inaugurated in 1992. Now, there have been some big-name winners of the Mercury Prize in past years, PJ Harvey, Franz Ferdinand, Arctic Monkeys, but some critics of the award are saying that they are awarding the prize more often to these obscure acts like Young Fathers that really are never heard from again. This Young Fathers album sold fewer than 2,500 copies in the UK. Very few people had heard of it. When the prize was announced, it got a sales bump of only a few hundred copies. This is not Taylor Swift category we're talking about here. But I think the wider issue here, Jim, is that most bands are not selling a lot of albums these days. A quarter of the acts nominated this year for the Mercury Prize have sold fewer than 1,000 records. So it speaks to, I think, the wider issue of the music industry and the decline in recorded music sales. You're listening to Sound Opinions, and that's the song Insane Lullaby. It was recorded for the Sparkle Horse project Dark Night of the Soul, and it's the first time that two great artists came together, Brian Burton, a.k.a. Danger Mouse, and James Mercer of the Shins. Now, it was a really fruitful pairing, one that led to the formation of a band called Broken Bells, and two albums later, it's still going strong.
James Mercer has been on Sound Opinions before, talking about his work with the Shins, but Brian Burton is famously shy with the press. So we were thrilled when he agreed to join his Broken Bells bandmate for a live event in James's hometown of Portland, Oregon. Greg, you and I were joined by the listeners of OPB Music for a special performance presented by Goose Island at the historic Arlene Schnitzer Concert Hall. James and Brian talk about writing songs together, maintaining their individual identities, and living up to people's expectations. They also performed some tunes from their latest release, After the Disco. First, we go back to their first fateful meeting at the Roskilde Festival in Denmark.
Were you aware of each other's work prior to that? Had you been listening to each other's stuff and when you had met?
Yeah, I had just... So that would have been 2004. So I guess 2003 is when Shoot Shinaro came out, right?
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's right.
I remember where I was when I heard that. I heard it playing in a Warp Records office and kind of, you know, was like, what is this? You know, I hadn't heard the first album or anything like that. I had never even heard of it. And I just heard that record playing. And I wound up just listening to it a lot for the next couple months. And then I went and did a festival and saw they were on the bill the next day. And so I came back the next day just to watch them play. And I went backstage and the band was back in the same... They were in the same dressing room I was in the day before. They were playing the same time just the next day. So I went back just to watch them. And I wound up meeting them backstage before they went on and watched from the side of the stage. And then we wound up hanging out, watching Morrissey and some other bands. And we wound up going to into the city, into Copenhagen or something. And
yeah, that's yeah. Right.
So that's the first time we met, was this whole big, long, huge...
And 3 days later, after walking into Copenhagen, you reemerged. And
what happens in Copenhagen stays in Copenhagen, huh?
So James, I got to ask you: were you one of those millions of people that downloaded the Gray album, the Danger Mouse, the unknown Danger Mouse at the time had floated
out
there?
You know, we were playing the Gray album when Brian came and visited us. We had it on backstage. Do you remember that detail?
I kind of do. I think so, yeah.
So Marty reminded me of that.
Yeah.
That we were actually listening to it when he showed up. So it was a nice coincidence.
Never been a nigga this good for this long, this hood, for this pop, this hot, for this strong, with so many different flows. This one's for this song. The next one I switch up. This one will get bit up. These buffs too lazy to make up. They shake crazy. They don't paint pictures. They just trace me. You know what? Soon they forget where they pluck. They hold staff and they try to reverse the outcome. I'm like, tough. I'm not a writer, I'm a writer for myself and others. I say a big verse, I'm only big enough, my brother, big enough, my barrel, I'm big enough to do it. I'm that.
That seems really rare, though. I mean, our experience as journalists, and I know many musicians that we've interviewed, too, have this experience, that sometimes you meet somebody whose work you admire. They turn out not to necessarily to be people you admire. But the fact that you guys had...
Too true.
Too true.
We could talk for hours about that.
But we won't.
And yet, you guys seem to have struck up this fast friendship built out of this mutual admiration musically pretty quickly.
Well, yeah, I mean, it was 2004, so a lot of stuff hadn't even happened yet, you know, for myself anyway. We would just see each other as it went on. The next time I saw him, you know, the first time there was no Gnarls Barkley, and the next time there was, we ran each other on tour a couple years later. And I think I was doing Good, the Bad, and the Queen, I think.
Yeah, you showed
each other
me
in London.
A little bit of that.
I was playing in the demos for that, like in a hotel room in London, just trying to impress him and stuff. But little by little, I guess there was more stuff that I guess we were both doing, and then eventually we just kind of, it was kind of a natural progression. I always wanted to work with him, but it was just the right timing, and it wound up being 4 years after we first met, but then that's 4 6 years ago, something like that, 6 years ago.
Now it would be, we both were in a situation where we wanted to just do some new project, still something creative, but I guess different than what we had been recently involved with.
You know, James, this question is specifically for you because I think people view you as kind of calling the shots primarily in that group. And then working with somebody like Brian where it's very much a collaboration.
Yeah.
Were you just looking for something different than being the guy doing all the heavy lifting all the time?
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to collaborate with somebody. I wanted to write with somebody. And I also... I wanted to work with somebody who was a producer too. I mean, I just saw these roles out there that I had yet to really discover in my own work life, you know, and it was kind of a perfect moment, I think, for me.
So Brian, you're very particular, I think too. You've either very particular or very fortunate or some combination of the two, but it seems like everything you've worked on has had a great deal of artistic merit. It doesn't seem like you choose your collaborators idly. Like, it's not whimsical. It seems like you have a very specific idea of working with somebody for a reason. Maybe I'm completely off base about that, but what was it about James that made you want to work with him?
Well, it's kind of the same thing. I mean, I just try to find something that's already amazing and great. I don't try to make something into something that's that way, try to keep it that way. And I try to just get involved with people who are already doing something unique and special themselves. And James is one of those people. I mean, I think that for me, when I remember seeing something, just I don't know, you kind of hear people talk about bands and this and that. And, you know, you talk about the Shins and it just wasn't the same. It wasn't just some indie rock band. There was a voice and there was something going on there. You listen to the music, you hear the melodies. It's very, very, very special. And I trust you. I didn't think that was something that was necessarily a widespread known thing at the time. Now, I didn't know enough, and then you see tons of fans and everything else, but when I heard it, it was something very, very special and different. So I sought it out like I do anything else that's like that, to try to be a part of something that's already pretty special.
Here's Broken Bells performing Medicine from their latest album, After the Disco, live in Portland on Sound Opinions. Disorder, not a room, son, and it's something of a prison hold. And the only thing we know for certain is don't nobody know. You think none of this is real, that's why you never try to tear it down, build it up. It's the same.
Medicine by Broken Bells, live on Sound Opinions at the Schnitzer Hall in Portland, Oregon. We'll have more with James Mercer and Brian Burton in a minute on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX. Coming up, more with Broken Bells, and then it's my turn to add a song to the Desert Island Jukebox. Welcome back to Sound Opinions. I'm Jim DeRogatis. My partner is Greg Kot. And the song you're hearing now is called A Perfect World by our guest this week, James Mercer of The Shins and super producer Brian Burton, who worked together as Broken Bells. The pair joined us for a special live taping of Sound Opinions presented by Goose Island Beer and OPB Music at the Arlene Schnitzer Concert Hall in Portland, Oregon. Brian Burton, or Danger Mouse, is a noted producer, and many of you will know his work with Gnarls Barkley, Gorillaz, and Beck, to name a few. So I was curious what James Mercer thought a collaboration with Burton would be like. What could he bring out of the Shins frontman?
I think I wanted a collaborator, and I was curious about this role of a producer and what that could do, you know? So, I mean, and Brian is both. Brian's a songwriter. I mean, mainly. I think Brian's a songwriter. So maybe that's the difference, you know, from the guy who is somebody who's sort of hands-on and gets into the songwriting and into the real mechanics and the math of trying to make this stuff cool, and somebody who sort of sits back behind the couch and watches everyone, and then every 15 minutes says something's lame.
Yeah.
You know, he's not that type of producer. You know, he's really in there with the nuts and bolts of stuff.
Well, and I read a joint interview where you said the songwriting comes from us having conversations. And it didn't sound as if they were like, let's rant about, you know, whatever political issue today. It sounded like they were personal conversations that then inspired you guys to begin a song.
It's the other way around, really. It's we make the music in the studio. We go in and we don't really discuss what's going to happen that day. We'll go in with nothing. We'll just go in and start picking up instruments, and by the end of the day, we'll have the rough sketch of a song, and the next day, we'll see if it's any good after we slept on it, and then if it's good, we'll work on it. But then we do that over and over again until we have a body of music. But in the meantime, it's kind of like something else is happening, which is at the end of each day, you know, James kind of comes down from Portland down to L.A. and lives with me, and at the end of each day, we go eat and drink and get belligerent and talk about everything, basically, and each other in our own lives, and we get really into it, and that adds up over the course of months and months and months. And when we're done with all the music, we sit down, the worst, most painful part of it, we sit down and pull out our pads and pens, and we start writing the album. What does this album mean? What do these songs mean? And they're scratch vocals, but we haven't really done the lyrics yet. And sure enough, by the time the songs start coming out, it winds up being all the stuff we were talking about. But we don't discuss it. It's just what winds up happening. And you see the song like, all right, I guess this is the thing we were talking about here or there. It just winds up being there. And it's really easy to communicate at the end of the record for us because we just spent the last however many months getting to know each other again and where we are in our lives and everything, and that's what winds up on the album.
Let me get it out of my system, this Eno fixation of mine, okay? His approach to me to production is very zen. You're living your life, and you follow that path or that stream wherever it goes. It sounds like that's what you guys do. You're getting together, you're working on this, you're seeing what's coming out naturally of the two of you being together, and then you realize at the end it's produced a theme and an album and a concept.
Yeah, everything's a concept album, really. I mean, you spend a couple months with somebody, and when you're done, there's going to be something. If it means anything, it's going to be something specific to that time and everything else. So I think the last record we did is very much that, whether we like it or not, it just was.
That's fascinating, because I think when people think about collaboration, they think about what you are describing, two people in a room exchanging ideas and literally writing each line together, it seems like. But that happens incredibly rarely, actually. When you talk to so-called collaborations, usually one guy or gal is bringing in the bulk of the song and the other guy sort of puts their finishing touch on it. Amy Mann, we had Amy Mann on the show a couple of times, and she's talked about this issue of giving up control of the song. Like, once you start it, you know kind of where you want to finish it, and you have this idea in your head of what the song's going to be. And it's very difficult for somebody to collaborate with somebody else because they already have a clear idea of where that song is going to go. They may not know exactly how they're going to get there, but they have a pretty good idea. So it's interesting that you're able to sort of give up that control. Well, and write together.
I think that implies that there's enough skill involved, I know, on my part, to be able to do that, and there isn't. Like, every good thing that's ever happened was probably an accident that I've been a part of that I would have contributed. Any idea of sitting down and going, okay, I'm going to try this, and when I get to the end, it's going to be that. I've done it. It's not very good usually. But when somewhere along the way something happens that you didn't mean to, or somebody else was involved in it in a way that you would have never thought, that's usually the stuff that winds up being a little bit special for me. So the idea of giving up the control and everything else, I'm not good enough to control it anyway. So
that's very similar to what I was going to say. I mean, I would just add that sometimes that main idea, that perfect picture that you had in mind where the song was going to be and what it was, that's exactly the problem with the song. that's the thing that you're going to have to drop right away.
But see, this whole industry is set up. I guarantee, Brian, you've gotten 100 calls, you know, give me that crazy thing. Can you give me that crazy thing? I've got a project, right? And you've gotten, like, we need this, we need that Garden State music. Can you give us more of that Garden State?
The thing that I have is that I've written many songs where people say, oh, James Mercer's trying to do that new slang thing again, which I've never done. I've yet to even have that conscious thought in my mind. In fact, I would do anything but that. I would, you know, forever try and stray from that. Yeah, but that is an annoying fact.
Go. And a curse for this town. We're all in my mouth. Only I don't know how they got out here. Turn me back into the dark. I was when we met. I was happier then with no mindset. And if you turn to me like a girl, jump from my trees and die and dance like a king in the ice. So is the rest of our lives when we fed one. New slang when you notice the stripes, the dirt in your thrives. Hope it's right when you die.
That's the old music industry talking, that's for sure. Broken Bells, okay, it's interesting too, because I think people kind of viewed it as, I think initially people were describing it when the self-titled record came out in 2010, side project. But how did you conceive it when you first started working together, Brian? What was your feeling? Was this going to be something that was more than just two guys getting together in the studio writing songs?
I mean, I think every time, yeah, I mean, every time I work with somebody, I figure it's going to be, you know, the lifelong marriage, it's going to be the best thing ever, and everybody's going to love it, and everybody's going to finally like something a lot that I do or whatever, and I always think that, and this was no different, really. I mean, it just means a lot. It meant a lot from the first week we were in there, and we weren't trying to do anything specific, you know, it was just, let's see what happens, but this was not a business arrangement. It wasn't like our, you know, people putting us together or anything like that. I mean, we didn't even we waited till we finished the album before we let any labels or anybody hear it. I mean, we just did it ourselves. We just kind of went and did it. But the thing is with James, and, you know, which was really easy to tell right away, which even though I knew him casually, you don't know till you're in the studio, but you can tell from his music and everything else. And I would even say for myself too, is that anything you do means something. There's no throwaway. There's no like side this or side that. It just wouldn't work. It just doesn't happen that way. I think it's hard for people to maybe, you know, if you see a lot of music or there's a lot of collaborations, a lot of things, to understand that. But yeah, no part of it is throwaway or kind of just for fun or to be associated with. I mean, when we're in there, everything means something. So in the context of our other bands or other things, I mean, it just doesn't, you don't really separate them in that way. Like one means more or one has a different meaning or importance or anything like that.
Let's hear some live music from Broken Bells. Here's the song The Angel and the Fool, live on Sound Opinions.
Broken Bells with The Angel and the Fool, live on Sound Opinions from Portland. Let's go back to our conversation with James Mercer and Brian Burton. I asked James how he felt this new project affected the way he sings.
I mean, I would credit Brian with just sort of forcing me to do parts over and over again until I got them right. We both like to avoid using that auto-tune software and stuff like that. So that means that I need to do the work of just getting a good take. And so I think that you know, it's such a magnifying glass on your singing when you're sitting there with the headphones and you're just sweating in the little vocal booth in his studio and you really want to get out of there. And
it's small.
It's small, and so you're trying to just get exactly the right feeling in that little moment, and so you just get more aware. I mean, I think it's a real learning process. Mm. And I had never done that before, you know. I often was engineering my own vocal takes, so maybe I'm just an inherently lazy person, but I would just sort of do my best, and I'll double it. I'll do three or something, you know, and let that go. But so it was that. I mean, I think and then also the fact that stylistically we're doing different things, and so I'm sort of getting into territory that, you know, it maybe isn't traditionally like an indie rock vibe, you know, and so I'm singing in different styles and stuff, which, I mean, I've probably done in the car, like all of us, you know, listening to your favorite tunes on the radio.
Singing along to some disco tracks.
Yeah, you know, whatever. And so, like, and now I get to actually kind of use some of that stuff, my love for those pop tunes of the past and stuff.
So this whole thing of Broken Bells not being a band, how long do you think that's going to linger until people finally accept, oh, that's a real band?
I don't know. I think you'd have to really know about us specifically, and we're not super popular to even say it's not a band. I think there's a lot of people who know Broken Bells, or maybe who've heard of it and don't know what we do. So they're obviously going to, you know it's a band.
But was people, that freeing, you know, in a way, James? You know, I mean, Shins, you were typecast. Everybody knows you. It's that band, Garden State, the hit, right, et cetera, et cetera. And all of a sudden, you get to reinvent yourself. I mean, he doesn't have that problem because he's a man of many mystery guises, right?
True. Well, yeah, I mean, I felt freed up, definitely. I mean, I, when you were asking earlier, you know, did we think of this as a band? I mean, I think when I first started working with Brian, I saw it as a way out, you know, in a way, you know, so I was like, this is my new band. I mean, I wasn't thinking this was any sort of side project. I mean, I didn't know what the future would be, but I was hoping, you know, that it would be this sort of thing. And then, you know, after working the Broken Bells record, touring and everything, I felt this renewed inspiration to go back to being that sort of benevolent dictator of my own project.
Right, 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 right. So they help each other, those two projects.
Yeah, exactly.
Here's James Mercer and Brian Burton as Broken Bells with the song Holding On for Life on Sound Opinions.
In my hands, you tell me.
Holding On for Life from Broken Bells on Sound Opinions. We return to our interview held in front of a live audience in Portland with a question for Brian Burton, a.k.a. Danger Mouse. He produced the now infamous U2 album Songs of Innocence, a polarizing release that iTunes users got for free. When we recorded this with Brian a couple of months ago, Songs of Innocence had yet to be released. I asked Brian how he negotiates his track record as a hitmaker, producing songs like Crazy for Gnarls Barkley, with his instincts as an avant-garde artist, especially when it comes to acts like U2 with these huge expectations.
I can't get too much into that, you know, specifically with that band, but I've seen it a lot with a lot of bands and a lot of people, and I think that the consistent thing is the more success or the more, I guess, celebrate it. And the decision is usually, and it carries out in one or two ways, either, and it's hard when you have four people because they can all make different decisions, but the thing you have to figure out is, do you want to be celebrated or discovered? And I think that you spend so much of your time in the beginning trying to be discovered that once you start to be celebrated, you just want to keep that, and that's boring. The sound of that's pretty boring. And I think that if you want to be discovered, then that takes balls, it takes another risk, and you can lose a lot if you do that. But the sound of people holding on to what they have is not usually very good.
Well, after the disco, the new album, when it came out, immediately thought 3 a.m. That was the first thought that came into my mind. It's not, you're not at the disco, it's after the disco. And it made sense to me from that standpoint. It's like, okay, what do you need to hear when you're, you know, everything's wearing off? And but at the same time, you threw out that word disco, and it was amazing to me how many people reviewed the record as a disco record. Like, they were trying to, like, wedge it into that disco era stuff.
Yeah, you could call the album No More Rock and Roll. They're like, so you made a rock and roll record?
Yeah.
No,
yeah,
we said yeah. No more. Yeah, no, it's after the disco. I mean, poor choice of title maybe at this point. I thought it sounded cool at the time, but
I still think it sounds cool.
Yeah. We get to be misunderstood
you
or something.
You thought 3 a.m., I thought 43 years old. Yeah.
Oh, they're sort of the same.
Relatively similar.
Yeah. After the disco.
Here's the sound of 3 a.m. or 45 years old. Take your pick. The song is Control from Broken Bells from the album After the Disco, live on Sound Opinions. Thank you.
That was Control, the final song from Broken Bells on Sound Opinions. To watch videos produced by OPB Music, visit us at soundopinions.org. Have a comment on Broken Bells, Danger Mouse, or anything in the musical universe? Give us a call for the air at 888-859-1800. Coming up, Jim drops a quarter in the Desert Island Jukebox on Sound Opinions from WBEZ Chicago and PRX.
Island is bewitched.
Just a castaway, island lost at sea. Now I'm stranded on my own. Stranded far from home. But come on.
You remember, we were shipwrecked together.
Stranded, I'm so far from home. Stranded, yeah, I'm on my own.
Welcome back to Sound Opinions. I'm Greg Kot with Jim DeRogatis. And as often as possible on Sound Opinions, we like to take a trip to the Desert Island, drop a quarter in the Desert Island Jukebox, and play a song we cannot live without. Jim, you're climbing into the powerboat as we speak. What do you got for us next?
Greg, we have to mark the passing of John Simon Asher Bruce, better known as Jack Bruce, one of the most important musicians in the English scene in the 60s. He, of course, was the bassist in the first supergroup Cream, playing alongside drummer Ginger Baker and guitarist Eric Clapton. You know, he died and everybody was talking about Cream as if that's the only thing he ever accomplished in his years as a musician. He did a lot of other things. There were other power trios, West, Bruce, and Lang. There were many solo albums. There was a band with the great jazz drummer Billy Cobham. He was always active in the blues, avant-garde rock underground throughout his life, even while battling addiction and health problems. I'm going to play not a Cream song. I was never a huge Cream fan, though I loved the singles when he had that rich baritone vocal, right? At 2.5 minutes, Cream was great. I'm going to play another supergroup, though. My favorite was the Golden Palominos, formed by Anton Fear, a drummer who moved from Cleveland to New Jersey in 1981. And the Golden Palominos put out several albums and dominated sort of the New York underground in the early 80s with musicians like Bill Laswell, Jody Harris, visitors like Richard Thompson sitting in, Bernie Worrell, an incredible revolving cast of characters. They're probably best known for a single from their second album, Visions of Excess, that featured Michael Stipe on vocals from R.E.M. covering Moby Grape's Omaha. But that same album also included a wonderful tune called Silver Bullet that had been written by Anton Fear, Jody Harris, and Sid Straw. Jack Bruce sang, and he played bass, and I got to see the band perform this live, and man, Bruce was just larger than life. Those vocals, that bass, in front of Anton Fear, who, I'll say it, is a better drummer than Cream's Ginger Baker ever could have been. It was just an amazing night, and that's how I'll remember Jack Bruce. Here's the Golden Palominos with Silver Bullet, my Desert Island Jukebox pick on Sound Opinions.
Yeah.
Silver Bullet by the Golden Palominos, Jack Bruce on bass and vocals, paying tribute to him on the occasion of his death at age 71. Greg, what do we have on the show next week?
Next week, Jim, we're going to line up the year's most disappointing albums. It's the annual Sound Opinions Turkey Shoot.
Greg, we have special thanks to Adam Yaffe, Dave Christensen, and OPB Music, as well as the Arlene Schnitzer Concert Hall this week. Sound Opinions is produced by Jason Saldana, Robin Lynn, Anthony Martinez, and our intern is Alex Claiborne.
On Sound Opinions, everyone's a critic. So now it's time to hear what you have to say.
New messages.
Hi, my name is Elizabeth Connolly. I'm from Long Beach, New York. I just finished listening to your interview with Ira and your question about math, music, and the brain. They are all interconnected. I am an educator. I remember when I was in school, one of my fellow students did a study on teaching things musically, and children remembered things taught to them in verse, carried along to a tune, rather than just rote talking. Listen to your teacher drone on, where if she sang your lessons, you'd learn them. Thanks. Bye.
My name is Tim Elliott, and I'm from Franklin, Tennessee. I had a brain aneurysm about 29 years ago, and they played songs to me the whole time I was in a coma, and I came out of the coma about 4 days later, and to this day, I can sing those songs word for word. Music is beautiful. See, I love you. Bye.
Where is my mind? Where is my mind? Where is my mind?
Hi, guys. This is Trent from Chicago. I'm so glad you touched on the wall, you know, the 35-year anniversary. What I thought was interesting was that you said the trial was unlistenable, that you can't even go there, you know, on that album. And that song is the absolute just culmination, right, of so many things that's happening. You got the mother, the teacher, the wife, everybody is now, you know, just boom, it's all right there. All these things you've been trying to put behind that wall, he is now forced to confront with them.
My friend, you have revealed your deepest fear. I sentence you to be exposed before you.
And I can even remember the exact moment, the first time I heard that song. It's funny you mentioned the age of 16 being appropriate for the album. I was, in fact, 16 years old at the time, and I was in the back seat of my friend's car. I remember the exact parking lot we were in. I remember the exact location of the exact city. And that moment was actually the moment that I fell in love with Pink Floyd. Obviously, I'm a little biased, but I urge you to please go back, listen to that song again. And, of course, the visual representation in the movie is unlike anything other than, you know, done before. So, once again, my name is Trent from Chicago. Thanks for doing what you do, guys.
Hey, guys. This is Becky from Chicago. I just listened to your Pink Floyd The Wall episode, and it really struck me because recently I've revisited it. And Thin Ice in particular has been an earworm lately because got a lot of things going on in my life, and just that little organ that plays in the middle of that song really gets to me and is kind of just bringing me through my day.
Don't be surprised when a crack in the ice appears under your feet. You slip out of your depth and out of your mind with your fear flowing out.
Thanks for touching up on that album, and it's one of my favorites. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Hi, I'm Dave calling from
Winfield, Illinois, and I just wanted to note today the passing of one of the great bassists of my generation, and that's the great Jack Bruce of Cream fame, but before that, many bands, and many bands after that. Don't know many people that could play with his speed and dexterity, and I miss you, Jack, already.
No more messages.
To give us your opinions on Sound Opinions, call our hotline, 888-859-1800. We'll be back next week with more Sound Opinions, produced by WBEZ Chicago and distributed by PRX.
At Progressive, we know there's nothing like the feeling of riding a motorcycle with your crew on the open road. That symphony of engines roaring in perfect harmony. It's a feeling that would be impossible to recreate on the radio. Until now. Hit it, Jerry. Oh, my word. Really, really terrible. Is that a Glockenspiel, Jerry? Quote with Progressive and see if you could save with America's number one motorcycle insurer. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates.
No, Jerry. It's over.